Ian Hill, Deputy Clerk. Joshua Johnson, Business Owner and Developer. Playing shortstop. No, sorry. Jack Munns, Retired Police Sergeant. Marcus Parton, Business Owner. Alex Shea, Housing Finance Executive. Jordan Valenzuela, Business Owner. And Kimberly Vollmers, Mother and Educator. And I also want to let you know that we have these postcards that have been created by VP of Marketing Communications Aaron Hall. On them, there is a QR code. So to get one of these, we do have stacks of them around, and Haley from the chamber will be passing them around if you'd like one of those. She's in the back there. If you scan that, you'll go to a web page that's been created that gives you all of the information that was provided to us by the candidates, so you can get some background information on them. And you can certainly look at that tonight or at your own on your own afterwards. So I appreciate all of the information that was shared, and Aaron for putting that together. So the order that we're going to answer the questions here, we're going to begin with James Crockett, because he was the one that drew the lucky number one. And then we'll move on in sort of a staggered way to Joshua for question number two, and so on. And that's the fairest way we could think to do it. Remember, these questions came to us inspired from the results of a membership survey that we sent out recently. So we hope that you get a sense for what the business community is thinking and concerned about, and that you're going to hear from the candidates what they think about these issues. So with that, we're going to begin, and you can see the timer there on the iPad, and this is for the candidates' information, is that it will be indicated by, I believe, a green line, and the bar will get bigger and bigger as it goes all the way around 360 degrees around that circle, and that will be 2 minutes total, correct? Okay. So the time will begin once I am done answering the question, and anyone who wants me to repeat the question, I'm happy to do that, and your time will not start until after that question has been asked completely. So, ready, James? I'll refer to you all as Mr. or Ms. for the rest of the night, though, okay? Mr. Crockett. You're used to that. According to the Reading Chamber's survey of its membership, citing ongoing challenges of property crimes and repeat offenders, 80% of survey respondents indicated that criminal activity is adversely affecting their business. The Reading Police Department is finally back to staffing levels not seen since before the Great Recession. If times get tight again, how would you keep the cops? You have 2 minutes.
All right, so first off, the city council has done a good job over the last 6 years. I've been watching city council meetings that long, at least. And they have hired more cops, and they've gotten different training programs and stuff started up. So I think that's the way you go. And the hard thing is, a lot of the times, the good cops cost more money, the ones that are more tenured. But I think lateral recruiting, I think selling the area, you know, to recruit, bring people in. We just did an approval for getting a bonus for people that sign on here. But ultimately, I think that it's a value system in the community. If we are on the city council, we're listening to the community. And if we want more cops instead of other amenities, that's what we would have to do in the terms of a recession. Hopefully we won't be there. But a lot of times the solution, if you study economics, isn't necessarily hiring more cops. Sometimes it's getting a new business in and getting people jobs so they're not out committing crimes. So one of the things that I would definitely focus on if I was on the city council is continuing to revitalize our economy. The driving forces of our economy right now are basically people coming here to spend money, whether it's a church or they're going fishing or they're visiting a grandpa or something. We get people to come here and spend money, and that's the biggest thing in our economy. I would like to leverage other things in terms of an available workforce, good conditions, incentives tax-wise, maybe even to get other businesses coming here. As we enlarge the tax base, it will do marvels for us if we do see another downturn, because right now our economy is not super robust. A downturn might actually hurt our economy more than other economies, since it's primarily a travel economy. So the answer to how do we keep more cops in a downturn is to think ahead now and build a robust economy that is not reliant on any one thing. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson, same question.
Yeah, I think that we are in a much better position than we were in 07 when we were surprised by an economic downturn. The fact that we even have this as a question right now is encouraging to me, that as a community we're looking ahead. And I think the key is having enough reserves set aside where we can absorb a little bit of a downturn when we know that we have ebbs and flows as a community. And basic economics tells us that we're going to have those times of recession and those times of growth. And our community, we have to, our leaders have to look ahead for that. But I think also the CERT program is a really great example of a program that it is to me the future of policing in a lot of ways, and if we do that well and we continue to grow that, we can continue to see cost savings because some of our repeat callers or people that take up a lot of our time and our beat officers' time in the field, we can actually start to see some cost savings in our city by doing that differently with social worker and policing. But you know, we have to be proactive about it, and I think that's the key, is looking ahead, putting aside those reserves. When we have good times, we're putting those aside and kind of planning for the future so that we don't have to take a hit to public safety in those times when we need it most.
Thank you. Over to Mr. DeQuisto.
Test one, test. Could you repeat the question again?
Yes. According to the Reading Chamber's survey of its membership, citing ongoing challenges of property crimes and repeat offenders, 80% of survey respondents indicated that criminal activity is adversely affecting their business. The Reading Police Department is finally back to staffing levels not seen since before the Great Recession. If times get tight again, how would you keep the cops?
That's a trick question. One of the things I'm most proud of on City Council is increasing the funding for the police officers. 4 years ago, I ran on that platform on public safety, and the other council members did as well, and we acted in a unified manner to do that. It took a little bit of time because the revenues go up and go down. We did it through COVID. We did it through increased TOT money. The property tax revenue stayed pretty much the same and went up a little bit each year, and the sales tax money went up each year. And we were able to raise the salaries for the police officers. We're able to offer a $40,000 transfer bonus, which got a lot of laterals in. Lateral takes less time to train. You don't have to worry about them washing out of the academy. You know the younger ones are cheaper. So you need the coming in from the bottom up and from the top or from the side over. If you have a jail and if you have consequences and if people get arrested and they know there are going to be consequences, you'll have fewer people that want to stay here and fool around and do bad things, and some will leave. That will take the need for police officers if you have to cut the budget and allow them to do more with fewer people. In addition to that, we have increased our reserves and we have money for capital projects. We've got about a 15% reserve right now, I think, at the close of this year for the budget. And I would take some of that money, but I would not be in favor of cutting salaries for police officers, and I would not be in favor of cutting community service officers. I think that was a mistake when it was done before, and hopefully that won't happen.
Ms. Valenzuela, same question.
All right, so keeping the cops, I took a couple of notes because I didn't want to lose track, but basically, if 80% of the businesses are worried about crime, and we want to keep the cops, I know that we are giving incentives to people from out of our area to come up here, and I've heard that they actually leave because there's not enough opportunity for business solicitation. So it's kind of like this circle that goes around. We need to make sure that the crime is down in order for businesses to function, in order for us to keep everyone here and enjoying our community. But I support funding the police completely and the programs that will advance our education. In addition to partnering with the nonprofits, I think that the mental health program and drug rehab rehab facilities that we have in the area have a lot of helpful opportunity. And so making sure that those nonprofits and the police are funded is going to be imperative.
Thank you. Mr. Munns.
Thank you. Well, as a retired policeman, one of the ways you have to keep people is you have to pay them. When I retired 12 years ago, it is a completely different game today. Everybody wants to defund the police. We don't want to call the police because we don't think they're coming. You know, there is a thing out there that when we don't appreciate what we have, things begin to deteriorate. The, repeat offenders, major issues, the repeat offenders commit about 90% of the crime. So one of the ways we do that is go after repeat offenders. Whether it's caseworkers or detectives, we need more cops. How do we keep them? We pay them more. We'd have to pay. Nobody wants to do that job today because it is so different. They're out there getting attacked verbally, getting the deaths of police officers has gone up way more than it was when I was there. There's just a lot of things that are going on now that didn't happen before. We also have to have economic growth. Our economic growth is really the engine to everything we want to do. More cops, helping with the homeless, mental health issues, alcohol and drug issues, all kinds of things going on like that. We need good planning, and I think we've done a good job of growth. But the key issues are we need to pay them more to keep them, and then we need to have a repeat offender program where we go after the ones who are committing the most crime.
Thank you. Ms. Audette.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out here tonight. So I think the downturn in 2008 really taught us a lot of things, and we felt the pain of not having officers in our community. We felt the pain on the river trails. We felt the pain in businesses. And so this is an issue that has a long memory. And so I don't think we'd be so soon to get rid of our officers again since we've worked so hard to get them. But one of the ways that within RPD that they're making sure that they are going to be a little bit immune to a quick economic downturn is that they've done a very good job of insulating themselves from any of the federal funding that's necessary for their equipment. We were able to, on our own, make sure that we had things that the federal government couldn't then take away from us and leave gaps in the budget and in our armories and that type of thing. So I do believe that they've been conscientious of how do we actually have growth that's sustainable. We have NPUs. We have different classifications of officers, which is really helping. It won't be the same. It's not just 120 officers. We have NPU. We have park rangers. We have different classifications that will also make it more affordable for us to be able to sustain that and keep them. So I do think we've come a long way. I think that's obviously something that we're bragging about, that we've actually got it to this level. And I think as a community, we've said safety is actually really important. We have to have healthy businesses to thrive. We've been very frugal in saving our money and making sure we spend within our means, and we have money if for some reason we have a downturn. We don't have to sacrifice safety and business in order to continue to run our government. So I would say we've done a great job. I think those types of things help us, and we should continue to think about how we're hiring, those classifications, what we take from the state or from the federal government that actually could possibly hurt us in the future. So I would continue those types of policies.
Thank you. Mr. Parton.
Good evening. One of the things that I pointed out during the campaign is my concern about crime and crime in this area and the economic impact it has on this area. I think so many people that have lived here for a period of time have seen a change. And because of that, we're willing to possibly invest more into what's going to keep us safe in the community. We have a plan now that has $40,000 signing bonuses for police officers. And that's great, but if they're rearresting the same people again and again, and it's a revolving door, that doesn't seem to help. And that's not what the police want either. Every time they go out there and rearrest the same person, they put themselves at risk. So it's more than that. It also, if we do not solve the crime problem, we're keeping people from coming into this area. As employers look to this area as alternatives, as workforce tends to look at this area for bringing their families and growing a safe environment, I think there's more of a willingness of the population that knows we need to invest in this, and we can take advantage of a couple of things. We can take advantage of those areas that are defunding police and show them that we rever the police that are coming to work with us. Also to bring people into our area that it's safe. Just like employees realize now when they look around that they don't need necessarily a interior office to work at. They can work remotely, and employers are realizing that as well. We can attract those people. We have all the natural resources around here to attract if we handle the crime problem. And so we fully invest in it. Number one, we plan for the future with the downturns, but I think we need to understand that that economic growth will come if we resolve that problem. Thank you.
Thank you. And now Ms. Vollmers.
Crowded space and lots of smiling faces. Thank you all for being here tonight. I don't want to repeat, although I do agree with a lot of what's been said so far, but I want to bring a couple of different things that came to mind with your question. For me, living here and using the spaces here, I think of the cleanup that they just did with Noor Pond and the populating the spaces that are vastly unused, I think is helpful, because we tend to shy away from using the spaces with a population that looks unsafe to us with not having enough information and knowledge. So when I go to the library with my children and I've invited other parents to come there and bring their children, they pull in the parking lot and they say they would like to leave now because it doesn't look safe. So some of the things that I think that would be helpful for the community and the police department would be to see something and say something. There's a lot of misunderstanding and a lack of education of what to do and how to be a part of the solutions and not solely think that the police officers are our only solution. We are part of that solution as well. And then I feel that expanding financing for the CERT team so that that intervention can happen and prevent future crimes, potentially change the trajectory of those people's lives and prevent them from doing crime. And let's see, what else did I jot down? The incentive for hiring the police officers, I think, is tremendous, and it's done all throughout the state and other states as well. And it's something that brings people that have a wanting to do the profession and have a passion for it, and they may not even know what Redding, California is. So once we were to able to get them here, because someone may know someone who lives somewhere else, and we bring them here, I think they would be happy to stay and contribute to our community.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
Thank you guys for coming tonight. I want to honor the existing council. You guys have brought us back to pre-2007-2008 levels in terms of sworn officers, so well done. Thank you very much for serving our community. We have to think, I'm all for getting boosting reserves, but we also have to think long term, because reserves will only last for a while. That's why they're reserves. So what kind of shrewd investments can we make today so that we don't have this bigger problem down the line? The first thing is data analytics. Talked to Chief Shuler last week. He said, and some other folks have echoed it, 5% commit 90% of the crimes. That's low-hanging fruit, guys. Number one, okay? Number two, proactive policing. We're talking park rangers, we're talking CERT team, and a lot of my other fellow candidates have mentioned it already. But if they are in the neighborhood, and the bike teams especially, they're only half staff still, but they are in the neighborhoods, in the parks, that is preventing crime. Yeah, we'll have the reserves to maintain the officers in the future, but we're going to be depleting that at a much slower rate. And finally, again, this is from Chief Shuler last week. He said, if you can get me, now this is, we're dreaming here, right? So just go with me for 1 second. He said, if you can get me 100 units of temporary shelters tomorrow, I can clean the streets off and get 100 people off the streets. His words. And if we as a council can work creatively and get there, I think we can get something done. And we're not going to have an issue in the long term where, hey guys, we're going to have to dip into reserves. What if we don't need reserves? Because we do such a dang good job today. That's what I think.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Hi everyone. So I'll keep it short. Basically, Yeah, basically you would want to reduce crime in other ways. So walkability, mental health services, a number of ways that have already been talked about, mainly because one of the biggest costs for policing is overtime. So if they have their caseloads and they're being overworked and they're having to put in these extra hours, that is quite a big cost. So that would be my major way for helping to safeguard them through the recession would be finding other means to sort of take that workload basically at a cheaper rate. Also with that, when we do have a surplus in the city budget, sort of putting that away for later when we know there will be a downturn at some point, not just for police, but for the city in general. But that way we can sort of navigate some of those ups and downs in the coming future. Thank you.
Thank you. We're moving on to question number two. And this one, we'll begin with Joshua Johnson on this one. This is not going to come as a surprise to many of us here. Homelessness was identified by 85% of those that responded to our survey as an issue currently affecting business in Reading. Citing specific examples, what approach would you support to make a noticeable difference? Do you favor collaborative projects with the County of Shasta and local nonprofits to help the unsheltered? Or do you think more programs will encourage more unsheltered people to choose to live here, therefore making the problem worse? You have 2 minutes.
I think that we have to look at this in two different ways. We have a stick and a carrot, and the stick that we need is the correctional backbone, so that it encourages people to get the help that they need. But I do think that while we're waiting on that, where we need more beds, we need programming for people that are within the correctional system to reduce recidivism and all those things, we're all in favor of that. And we believe the city of Reading needs to be at the table to collaborate with the county in that direction. There are things that we can do now that can help. And I would be in favor of the city partnering with community partners who would provide for what I would consider not shelter first or necessarily housing first, but housing that is tied to programming that would get them towards help and get them towards health. This is a health problem. We have open air drug scenes. That is a majority of what we see on our streets in the state of California and up and down the West Coast. And we have untreated mental health. And this is something that is not foreign to just novel to Reading. This happens everywhere in our state. And I think that we have to take a proactive approach, and we have to work with our community partners, because not all of this is a government solution. Some of this is a community solution, and some of this is things that you and I can do as volunteers to get be boots on the ground in our community. And I think it's going to take an approach from all three of those spheres in order to see a real change in our city.
Thank you. So moving over to Mr. DeQuisto.
So when I ran 4 years ago, I said I hate the word homeless, because it conjures up so many different thoughts and ideas in everybody's head. You can be homeless because you just got fired from your job and you can't make your rent payment the first of the next month, and you know you're going to be homeless. That's one end of the spectrum, and that person needs help. You can be homeless because you choose to live in Henderson Open Space for 10 years because it's a nice spot on the river and you can do whatever the hell you want to go do down there and nobody's going to bother you. That's a different kind of homeless person, and you can violate the laws. So the question is, how do you solve the problem? There is no one solution, one size fits all. There's many sizes and many solutions. The city council just recently did a program where we heard about all the different county agencies and the different homeless solutions and programs they have, and many of them overlap. And we directed the city manager to meet, and I think he has met at least once with his counterparts from the county, to talk about that and see what we can do as a group and as a team to try to help solve that problem. One of the things that I had suggested as part of that was a discussion about the jail, because I believe the jail is part of the issue too. There are homeless people that don't want to play by the rules. They don't want to do what's right. It's the 5% that they was talking about that cause all the problems, and those people need to be put away and get off the street. You get them off the street, that's a good chunk of the problem. You like to think of the homeless problem as three blind men in a room with an elephant. And you ask each one, touch the elephant, what do you see? So one man touches the tusks and said, I feel something hard and brittle. One man touches the tail and says, I feel something swishing and moving around. One man touches the ear and says, I feel a big floppy thing. One man touches a leg and says, I feel a big trunk. And that's the nature of the problem. It's not answerable or solvable in one solution. It's got to take a community, and it's got to take a group effort to do it. Frankly, if you look at the funding, the city doesn't have funding, substantial funding to do it. It's state funding that goes down to the county. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Valenzuela.
Well, I touched on a little bit of this before, but I definitely believe that we need to be taking into consideration the nonprofits and funding the mental health programs as well as drug rehabilitation programs. In addition to that, I want to be able to communicate with the county really well because they are working on a jail that's going to make sure there's not a revolving door, and I think that communication with the county is going to be really important to establish. And so with temporary and affordable housing, I think that there's going to be a nice mixture of the two. We want people off the streets, but we don't just want temporary. We want long-term solutions. So investing in affordable housing, I think, combined with mental health drug rehab programs, is going to eventually solve the homelessness issue. So that being said, I am all for working with the nonprofits.
Thank you.
Did you repeat the question?
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Munns. Homelessness.
Call me Jack.
Oh, I've got to keep it consistent. Outside of this, homelessness was identified by 85% of those that responded to our survey as an issue currently affecting business in Reading. Citing specific examples, what approach would you support to make a noticeable difference? Do you favor collaborative projects with the County of Shasta and local nonprofits to help the unsheltered? Or do you think more programs will encourage more unsheltered people to choose to live here, therefore making the problem worse?
Yes and yes. I am definitely for collaborative programs. The program I ran in Reno as a police officer was called Kids Corner. It was geared toward child abuse and neglect among the homeless. What we did was we took the services to them. Okay, what do you need? Oh, you don't know how to fill about the paperwork for your WIC money. Okay, well, we'll help you with that. Oh, you don't know how to go access it? Okay, we'll take you down there, show you how, introduce you, and walk you through all of these steps. We had a great partnership of the Reno Police, Sparks Police, Washoe County Sheriff's Office, Community Health Nurse, and Social Services, and then St. Mary's provided a big 53. I mean, we started with just two or three of us. By the time we were over, we had a staff of 15 helping us. And we helped save many lives, I think, and even a lot of people told us so. But the issue that we're currently having with the homeless is beds. I was told there's 541 homeless, and we're short beds. With the case that came out of Boise, if there's not enough beds, the beds they have on the sidewalk is their bed, and you can't move them from that place. And the judge from was it Chico that expanded that thing? We can't move them for minor little infractions as well. So that is their bed. Once we have enough beds, then we can get them help and move them along where they need to be. And in that case, I think we can refer them more to services, help them with the issues they have. So I'm definitely in favor of collaborative. I don't think, you know, they say if you build it, they will come. But I also think we're going to be helping a lot more people get in where they need to be, to become fully housed, start small, and then build on what we have, the success we have.
Thank you. Ms. Audette.
I think this is probably the most well-informed community about our homeless situation, about what our jail space looks like. I've never known more people that have more facts. But so I'm not going to go into everything, but I will tell you this. From the moment that I got involved with Leadership Reading, we ask our people that apply every year, what's the biggest problem? They say homelessness. When you, every campaign that I've worked on for the last 7 years, what's the biggest issue? It's homelessness. So for me, I wanted to go see what this actually is. So I've been doing ride-alongs with our crisis intervention response team. I've done 3 ride-alongs with the fire department. I've been down to Chico to actually talk to their public works director to talk about that lawsuit that happened there, what worked, what didn't work. I went to the operators of the pallet shelter down there to look at the shelters, to talk to the people that are living in them, to figure out what's working for them, what's not working for them. So this issue is obviously the most important thing that's happening. Now, it's also created by the government. So the state of California with Prop 4757 and AB 109 completely changed how we punish crime here. And so there's things that feel out of our reach to fix. However, the state is also now offering some funding for some solutions to the problem that they created. They haven't fixed punishment, if you know, and honestly, what we now have on the streets are different. It's not just criminals. We have the mentally ill. We have those that are addicted. So we have a community here that we all don't want to see them just suffer. We want them to get better. We want them to have jobs. We want all the things that we would want for our own kids. It's just that it's not so simple. They have a mind of their own. They're going to do what they want to do. So as I've gone into the camps, I've been talking. What are you looking for? When the crisis intervention response team is making contacts, when the police are saying we need a place to put them, we need a home for them as a first step, even if housing first doesn't afford you a caseworker, I feel like our nonprofits in the community actually want to step into that place. So we have lots of options here. There are many nonprofits that are stepping in to get hotels, to start doing services for them and saying, we'll step into the gap of government.
Thank you. Mr. Parton.
Thank you. As to the collaborative efforts, definitely. You know, we have to step in and continue to strive to meet that need of homeless. But there's really 2 different fractions for that. And the best example that I've seen of late is the Mer Pond open space, where we have somewhat like 25 different agencies here, that service agencies that help our community. And do we need to add more? And so the second answer, or the second answer to the second question, would be, I don't think we need more programs. We just need to implement solutions. Some of those solutions would include providing some housing for those who want it. Some don't want it. And getting back the Mer Pond open space, where there was weeks of notice and agencies went out to meet with these people who were encamped in that area for a long period of time and say, let us help you transition. Some of them didn't want to, and at least, as you know, we've cleaned up that space, but they've moved to adjacent spaces now. It hasn't solved the problem, and so because they didn't want help. So for those that want and need help, we have to make strides and efforts, and we have to allocate resources in order to do that. We're paying for it one way or another. For those that disobey our laws, that violate property rights, we have to have some consequences for those people. And if that helps them transition a different way, then that's good. The impact to our area, with over 3,000 hotel rooms in the area, on tourism alone is devastating, as people want to pass through town instead of staying town. You know, we have to feel safe in our community. And the way to do that is to invest both in the solution for those people that need housing and for those people that to take advantage of the system. And we've seen it with that 100 tons of garbage taken out of that area after they were asked to vacate that we've paid for as taxpayers.
Thank you. And now Ms. Vollmers.
I think this issue is the most paradoxical issue for everyone because it feels so personal, and it feels like when you're living here that it's so catastrophic, especially if you compare it to the past. But when you travel places, it's something that is statewide. So I think that creativity can come through looking at things from a point of view that we don't think it's those people and then us that are affected, because homeless people are counted in the sense of someone who is couch surfing, someone who is has lost their job or doesn't have a permanent place to live. And so the impact on that, I think that sometimes we can enforce and allocate resources and have connections and education of what resources are available, because like Tanessa did mention, there are a lot of resources here. I think that usually a lot of people right before they're going to be homeless don't know what their resources are and what the possibilities are to change their life and potentially their family's life. So affordable housing is something that can prevent people from being on the street, and then I think that we cannot assume that homelessness will ever end. It's not something that we even should put into our mind that it's something that we can solve, because it is a choice that some people make to connect people to resources, to educate them of what is available here, and then to enforce when people are committing crimes, because not everyone who is on the street is drug addicted. Not everyone who is on the street is a drug addict. And some people who are in a homeless situation, they go into those communities and they feel belonging. So continuing to advocate for the CERT team to intervene and educate them and connect them so that they create those new communities for themselves outside of living on the streets, I think. And the city can absolutely do that. There are ways that we can use state funding, and that is only through collaboration with nonprofits that are here, because they then can get those grant monies and state funding.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
I'm going to tell you guys a story. It starts off with someone that's here, boots on the ground. He's in the homeless camps day in and day out. He tells a story about a woman who's disabled. She has an EBT card. She's homeless. She looks at her, what she thinks is her, who she thinks is her friend. She says, "Hey, can you help me out? Go to the store for me. I can't walk." He takes it, and he runs away with it. It's the truth that they are both homeless, but it's not the whole truth. She needs a different set of services, and he probably needs to go to jail. Let's be real. So what's my point here? If we don't have data, if we can't properly segment who is out there, then we are misapplying the solutions to different groups. So what I'm looking at here is short-term shelters and housing, okay? Not permanent, and in my opinion, not affordable housing. We need short-term shelters that actually provide a space for our cops to have teeth, to be able to enforce and say, hey, get out of NERPON. You can't go here, but we have plenty of opportunities and solutions and services that we can attach and assist you and help you out with. The best part is, there are fantastic nonprofits. I want to highlight one. I'll highlight two. FaithWorks. They have transitional housing, 9 months long, for folks that just get out of jail. Not many people are going to hire them, but they actually provide them with the services and temporary housing to get them into permanent housing. The best part is 87% success rate. Problem is they only have 9 beds. That's effective. Let's help expand that. Next one, in terms of data analytics, Good News Rescue Mission. When I sat down with Jonathan Anderson, first thing he did was pull out his iPad, and he started flicking through photos. I'm going, what are you doing? That's Jason. He's been on the streets for 3 years. That's Jenny. She's been on the streets for 8 years. We need that.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
So first off, basically, as people have reiterated here, homeless people and the unhoused, they're not a monolith. There's no one way to treat them or act towards them or anything like that. They have varied needs, just like us. And also, I just want to say personally, many of us are probably closer to being homeless than we realize, rather than being a millionaire or billionaire. So this is definitely personal for me. But then working on collaborative programs, asking people who are already working with these people, what is effective? As the city, we do have resources that we can bring to bear, but we really want to ask people what is actually effective, what's worth our time, money, and other resources, just to see what's effective. And as to if more people would come, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try for those who are already here, because honestly, helping them helps us. And even from an economic standpoint, helping them is cheaper than continually having the police go after them and things like that. So I would be very much in favor of working with programs that are already doing what they're doing. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Crockett.
So I have a question. What are you doing to address homelessness around you? One of the best things I've ever heard Mr. DeCristo say down there is homelessness is a community problem and it requires a community solution. Watching the council meetings, I have a problem because community members are bringing solutions and they're being shot down. There was a lady that had a mobile showering unit, fully funded. Everything was taken care of. She just needed permits to do it and take it around. Homeless advocates came down. Homeless people came down. People that studied homeless said, this is the move in the right direction. But there's people complain because I don't want people that are homeless showering within, you know, 500 feet of my business. If you want to address homelessness, you are going to have to get together as a community and do it, which means you are going to have to do it. Our current mayor has done a phenomenal job. Our city council has a ton of services. It almost makes me feel uncomfortable how much the government is involved here because the government cannot fix the problem. You can fix the problem. We can fix the problem. But when we have people that bring up things like showering, another example is there's a church that has some small short-term housing, and it was a 3-2 split vote. If I'm thinking about something really cool to help address the homelessness in this area, and I'm worried the city council is not going to let it go through, I might not put my blood, sweat, and tears into that. So it's a cultural thing that we have to address. And whoever is going to be up here, whoever you vote for, needs to be able to look at that and say, yes, let's let the community get involved. It's not just a city council thing. It's not a government thing. It's a community thing. So until we get skin in the game, I mean, we can say all the nice things and mental hospital, more cops, like all the nuanced things that you're hearing everybody say, it won't fix the problem if it's all government run and organized. I teach students that are homeless, kids that are struggling to get through school, living out of their car. It takes human connection. It takes someone knowing that they care about them. It takes someone reaching out. And if you're not willing to do that, if our community is not willing to do that, it doesn't matter all if we implement all the things and we have unlimited money, it's still going to be a problem. It really requires us and our heart and our attitude towards them.
Thank you. We're now moving to question number 3, and it will be Mr. DeCristo that begins this round, let's say. So here we go. We have heard many times that Reading's large geographic footprint makes it challenging from a city budget standpoint to keep up with street maintenance and other infrastructure needs. When you travel around Reading, what do you see under the responsibility of the city that needs maintenance? How would you prioritize what should be maintained? How would you fund it? You have two minutes.
That's all?
I know, it's like a 5-question, 1-question, okay?
So let's talk about streets, because everybody drives on them, everybody uses them, everybody drives through the potholes, everybody goes around the construction. The street funding for Reading rely on federal money from the gas tax, and they try to make it worse. One of the things that I had asked for was just a little bit of funding for Airport Road from some of the ARPA money that we got, because they've got federal funding that's redone the parking lot and the loop around the airport. And we've got many, many planes that come in here now, lots of people that come into town, and it's one of the gateways to the city. And I said, why can't we pave Airport Road up either out through Knighton Road to the freeway and or up to 44 so that when they come in the city and they look at it, they get a good first impression. And unfortunately, there wasn't enough, there weren't 3 votes from the council to go and do that. So it's a tough problem. And we asked Mr. Rockham, we said, what's the solution? And he said, honestly, there isn't one. We need more money. We just don't have it. We spent, and it's part of the difficulty of being on council. We have to prioritize. We talked earlier about, well, what do you do if you have to cut the police or cut the fire? Well, police and fire are more important than roads, in my opinion. They're all important, but they're more important. So you have to make those choices. And we don't have an unlimited money tree in the backyard, which I wish we did. We just need to keep a strong economy to do the best we can. But I think the roads are the biggest thing. I think they're the most underlooked area of improvement that we can make.
Thank you. Ms. Valenzuela.
So how to fund the infrastructure and our parks and everything. It's definitely an important issue for me because I go around the parks all the time, being born and raised here, and I have a local business. Basically, I believe in no tax increases on the residents, but if we support and make sure that our local businesses are successful, we can get more support in tax revenue that way and be able to fund the police, pave the streets, and I know the utilities have this amazing technology that coordinates what kind of importance the streets need to be paved and everything. So they are advancing their technologies in that way. And park cleanup, I believe that the ARPA funds that they've been talked about to distribute this way and that way, either the riverfront or park cleanup or local businesses. So there's been a couple of different ideas, and I definitely am for park cleanup because I think it will reduce the homeless population in those areas. And with all of the facilities, the programs that we have a place to put them. So I think that local business support will be our solution for receiving funding as well as other grant opportunities from the government. I did want to clarify that I did not say that we would solve the people, but we would solve the homeless issue. So that being said, Alex said it very well when he said cops can do their job correctly because of the program we have supported and everything. So,
yeah. Thank you. Mr. Munns.
Thank you. You know, if gas tax from California and from the feds help us with our infrastructure should be fabulous. takes me $70-$80 to fill up my car, you know. But on a lighter note, 60% to 85% of our businesses that move or close is due to crime. It's not quite that strong in Reading, but we are moving that direction if we don't get a handle on crime and homelessness. We can't have economic growth if our businesses are leaving and not coming because of crime and homelessness. We got to take control of that. I think we have, according to Shuler, we have 121 cops when I think there's 7 or 8 or 9 in the academy. I believe we need more. And I'm going to be asking for about 5 more cops a year to help with that. And, you know, we all drive on these roads, and they're absolutely horrible. So I would put roads right at the top of the list when these alleged taxes that we're supposed to get come in. So thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Audette.
So government obviously is instituted for the protection of people and property, but next to that is infrastructure. And so our roads, our parks, the things that we rely on that we don't even think about, we just expect them to be clean. We expect them to be maintained. We expect that we're not going to damage our car by driving on the roads is not as sexy as having a lot of police officers. But because we've gotten ourselves to a position where we're staffed the way that we should be, it is important that we start prioritizing and putting on the table that we're going to take care of our roads. And obviously we can't take care of it all at once, but we can incrementally begin to do that. Same with our parks. It's a crying shame what's happened at Big League Dreams and the lack of maintenance that's happening there. And we could be a regional center for, which we are in many ways. We have lots of tournaments there, but we could actually be doing more. The opportunities that are happening in many of our parks and the community wanting to be involved, I think it's important that we capitalize on those opportunities. So when it comes to prioritizing our infrastructure, it's going to have to happen incrementally. We're going to have to put it as a priority. I think it's never going to be the easy sell that police and fire are, but it is necessary. And so part of having a good reserve or part of having a good, healthy budget is that we make tough decisions that are good for us in the long run. And so I think we can do it. I think we will do it. I think we've said that it's important. We expect it. And so you can count on us to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
Thank you. 61 square miles to maintain is a lot. And maybe we were too aggressive as a town in making the boundaries that big. But we're there, and we have to take care of it. We need to create an environment where economic development is encouraged that will help solve those problems. We need to bring us up instead of maintaining the status quo. I know that for years we've been compared to other market areas, and we've seen them grow, but Reading stays somewhat stagnant. You have to wonder why, with all the natural beauty we have around, our own electric utility that's a marvel. So we need to create an environment that can grow, and that goes back to the crime issue. It goes back to the crime issue. Look at the empty space that we have around, the empty retail space that's available. What if we're generating tax dollars with that? What can we do to make our city safer that's going to attract people and tourists to not only come here, but come here and stay? Come here and make longer stays, spend their money here, and help our community grow. And so we have a problem to fix it, but I think if we look to prioritization as we look to solve the crime issue, that will help to solve our infrastructure issues and increase tax base.
Thank you. Ms. Walmers.
Traffic and infrastructure for roads is something kind of comical in my family because my husband has worked in traffic for the last 12 years throughout the entire state. And so sometimes when I hear that people complain about roads here, I'm like, try traveling. Well, the routes that I take anyways, I know that it can be frustrating, but you should see the frustration coming out of people when the work is being done. So there's a flip side in my mind because we want the work done, but then, you know, you see the cones go down and you're like, oh my gosh, what, why in my neighborhood? Why in my city? I do think that we do and have been doing and increased the job that we've been doing as a city to promote tourism, and that tremendously helps, obviously, if we're using gas tax to do the road. So I would like to see maybe the next year plan and be a part of that plan, because allocating money for roads and for infrastructure for those types of things while we're drawing tourism, they need to go hand in hand. We can't draw people here and then have them never return. And recently I did listen to your podcast, Jake, of the woman who runs, what is it called, for the Civic Center.
Advanced Reading.
Advanced Reading, yes. I listened to that podcast, and I loved the information that she was giving was about the visitation that we have here that expands beyond the Civic. So the people who come to the Civic Center and how they go out and spend money elsewhere. So all the things that we have here, nature included, we don't even have to spend money. We live in it. We live in the reason to come here, the nature around us, and the money that they spend. So it's, I think, supporting that in an incremental way that sustainable would be something that I would love to be a part of.
Thank you. And the Commerce Connection podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. So with that, Mr. Shea.
Only $5 per download. Go straight to the Chamber of Commerce. Not true. False. Am I using my time for that? I guess I am. I would look at this in three ways, kind of a waterfall effect. So the question was, what do we prioritize? How do we maintain? The first thing is, what do we have to do? Okay, what's a safety issue? I talked to the airports manager, and this is about 8 months ago. This is before the federal grant came in. He said, we got to fix our runway. Because this is a binary outcome. Either the plane lands or the plane doesn't land. If the plane doesn't land, that's not a good outcome. So what are those situations in our city that we can tackle that we have no option, we need to spend that money? The second way to, let's say the tier would be, what's the biggest bang for the buck? And what that means is, all right, our infrastructure grade for this segment of the road is a 30%. And I think from our public works director, that is Reading's grade. It's pretty low. Which areas can we target, spend $1 million, just throwing out numbers, and get push out deferred maintenance farther, probably 6-7 years out, and make that calculation? Let's make informed decisions that actually can save the city money long-term, because if a city's running effectively, we're always deferring maintenance, the point, but we're always deferring maintenance. Number three, sustainability. Okay. What if we dig more wells in South Reading, because that's where aquifer reservoirs are? Maybe that helps cut costs on water, because we have to think big picture. It's not just infrastructure with roads. It's sewage. It's our aquifers as well. And, about
15% of our general fund budget right now goes towards infrastructure. That's number three. Number one and number two, police and fire. And so it would be worth exploring, hey, what if we, in the short term, take 1% or 2% from other areas, maybe the remaining 10% balance, and apply it there as a short-term fix?
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
So we are definitely at a disadvantage, being such a spread out and kind of not very dense city. So one thing, and of course our infrastructure, that is what we run on. So one thing would be densifying certain areas, to make the roads we have sort of more efficient, or effective service. Like if one road is only serving a business and two houses, that same length of road can be made to serve five houses and two businesses. And right there, we're already increasing the effectiveness of the funds we're putting towards roads. And also with that, when you densify an area, walkability increases, and that also just has a natural effect on decreasing crime. Because if more people are around most of the time or all the time, that deters crime. Also, specifically for streets, matching bonds and grants with projects. So big things that need to be done, that's what we'd want to do for those big projects instead of tapping into maintenance or into the regular allocation of funds and then using the regular yearly allocation for maintenance. I think that would be the best use of funds. And then for infrastructure, Reading is the natural terminus for the valley. People come through us. They have to, otherwise they're going all the way through the mountain and then on the coast. So a lot of people come through us. So make sure we have good infrastructure and people like that. That's going to attract business. That's going to attract people to come here. You know, they know they're not going to have to take their car to the shop every 6 months for new brakes or anything like that. They are going to like being here and driving here and walking here. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Crockett.
So I don't really see this as a controversial issue. By and large, I think the city council is doing a good job. I don't ever remember any meeting where there is a 3-2 split vote on something having to do with infrastructure. Everybody kind of has it where it's prioritized, and it's just, you know, infrastructure. It's not sexy, as the kids say, right? But it's something you have to deal with. So actually, to fix infrastructure issues, it's a simple resource management thing, right? You're not going to lay off a bunch of cops to fix a road. That's obviously not an option. So you have to grow the tax base. So if you want to deal with infrastructure, you're going to have to get a city council member up there that's going to vote yes on some decision that's going to bring a business in, that's going to enlarge the tax base, right? So another thing we could do, and if you don't know this, for every dollar you pay in taxes, we get about $1.05 back. Because we're rural, we get more money, we get more funding because our infrastructure is harder to maintain than a huge skyrise, you know, or you have one road or whatever. So I would look at hiring more grant writers. If we get a grant writer and we pay him $100,000 a year and they work 10 years and they get us one grant for $10 million, that's $9 million we just made as a community. So hiring more grant writers, looking at what's available and aggressively going after more grants to make it so we have more money to work on infrastructure, I think is a serious option. Unfortunately, there are people out there that think, oh, giving more money to give, you know, grant writers in the city of Reading, that's a bad idea because we're giving the city more money. So again, I think this is one of the places you splurge and you get really good grant writers. It's kind of like the quarterback on your team because the dividends when you get a good grant writer pay huge. So again, unless we get more businesses in here and enlarge the tax base or get good grant writers, you know, the money's going to have to come from somewhere. But those are a couple of solutions I think that we could move in and take actionable, you know, things on the city council to hopefully fix some of the infrastructure problems that we all know exist. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. I actually agree. We do need to do a good job as elected officials to go down and get the tax dollars that we all are earning and spending our hard-earned time and blood, sweat, and tears, and we're sending it down to the state of California, and we need to advocate to bring those dollars back here. Unfortunately, we live, there's pros and cons of living in the state of California, and one of the cons to many of us locally is how it feels like we're, how decentralized our tax system is. And unfortunately, I would like to see us go and advocate down in Sacramento more for those dollars. So I agree with that. One of the other things that I'm doing as a builder and small developer is the impact fees and looking at how our impact fees, which the spirit of an impact fee is actually to look ahead, charge enough to help us with maintenance of things, of those development services like sewer and water and traffic and parks and all of those things. I'd like to see, you know, unfortunately those dollars go into a general fund and they aren't actually being put aside to specifically go to fix that particular road or that particular sewer line running in front of that house 20 years from now, or is it being amortized in some sort of way? I'm interested in looking into that a little more, and I'm going to tell you I don't have the answer today, but I tell you I will work hard at finding that answer. Another thing that I'm really curious about is as we've expanded to 60 square miles, is all of that a good ROI for the city? Is some of that, can some of that be given back to the county because it doesn't make sense? The tax dollars we're getting in property tax doesn't make sense for the cost that it brings, that it requires us to add more fire, more police, our beat officers have to travel and have longer response times. All of these things have an impact on our city. So the last thing is that as we look at new projects coming to town, we have to consider the long-term maintenance in that proposal going forward. And as we look at parks and costs related to those other infrastructure items. So that's what I would do.
Thank you. So we're moving on to question number 4, and Ms. Valenzuela will be the first one to answer. And Mr. Johnson just gave me a nice segue because this one is about development. Let's say a large developer is ready to move forward with a client to build on a significant portion of Stillwater Business Park. How would you guarantee that the city's development services department would be able to deliver what would be needed to make sure the project moved forward on time? You have 2 minutes.
Well, don't give me the easy one. I would thoroughly analyze permitting because I realize that there are a lot of things that need update on permitting to speed up the process. I know that the city is doing their best to properly staff, and that's part of the permitting process and everything, making sure that the staff is there to move that forward. And I think that definitely we want to be considering what's going to be developing. So when we consider it, where I'm just thinking that with the permitting, we should be working with the people that want to make our parks better. So that being said, I think I would just analyze the permitting process to speed things up.
Thank you. Mr. Munns.
Thank you. I do agree the permitting process, I've been told, is, for lack of a better word, a disaster. And I think part of it, though, is not having enough people to work. I realize the park out there has been pretty dry for years and years, and then all of a sudden, you know, that's kind of the way it works. All of a sudden we have, 18 of 20 lots sold or 18 of 20 things working? So, things take time, permits take time, planning takes time. It also takes money. So we need all of the above to be able to function out there. We need the right people in the right jobs. We move a lot of people around, some in an effective role, and then we move them out of the effectiveness, and then that slows down the process. I've heard from several contractors about people that really work well, and then they move them out, and the person that comes in is not as knowledgeable and well effective. So effective people in the right places, money to get things done, and permitting. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Audette.
So to plug another podcast, the City of Reading has a podcast, and it's fantastic. And Jeremy was just on it talking about the permitting process. And so one of the things that I learned from that podcast was that we are rated 2, 1 being the best, 10 being the worst. We're rated 2 because we actually do a pretty good job in the state of California as Reading for permitting, because it's regulatory. It makes sure that, you know, things don't fall apart later on. And so if they're taking a little bit longer to permit things, it's to our benefit because it keeps our insurance rates down. So I don't want to dog on our planning and development department, but I do think that, especially when it comes to Stillwater, this is something that we've been working on for a long time. And one of the things that we offer to businesses coming in is the EDC, and our president right here, Todd Jones, who has done a very good job of actually coming alongside businesses. So when somebody wants to build, and listen, we want these types of businesses that are mid-level businesses coming into Stillwater. We have small businesses here in Reading, and we have some large corporations in Reading, but that mid-level business should be our Reading sweet spot, because we do can offer them cheaper utilities. We can offer them, if they want to be in California, they should be doing business in Reading. We can incentivize it. And so we're already doing that successfully at Stillwater, because we come alongside them. Our planning department, our people want Stillwater to be filled. They want those businesses to be successful. They want our small businesses to see what's happening there and to grow into those spaces as well. So yes, we're doing that. It's a great question. Somebody, Todd, did you plant that question? I feel like maybe you might have. Anyway, but so listen, we have really good people here. The people that work in our planning job, they want to do a good job. And if things aren't working, there's usually an answer to why. And I'd say the biggest issues that we have there are being addressed. They're going to be streamlining, using more IT for it. So more and better news is on the way.
Thank you. Mr. Parton.
Stillwater is an interesting case study for those of us that have been in town for a while, seeing what's happened and transpired as about, I believe, over $72 million of funds from both local and state and federal came into play for Stillwater, where people that own property, other property, commercial property, competed with this other property that we had to sell for, I believe, over $4 a square foot, you know, to break even. I've had an opportunity to go through the entitlement process from start to finish, both in affordable housing, other projects, both in the city, county, and in other jurisdictions. And so you get a chance to see the holdups. Been in public hearings when you see frustrated people, as it took 6 weeks to get a change approved in a major project, and that's what we're talking about in the example here, you could have hundreds of changes. Stillwater was planned originally as a fast-track permitting project, and still at that, it took a long time to come along. So we need to promote business to come into the area, of course, because that helps our economic base. But from a development standpoint, what we can do, we can make the process more streamlined, and it's almost by design you're unable to do that through state mandates. We can do, just like a lot of state mandates, we can do what we can do, but I believe that we can do better.
Yeah. Thank you. Ms. Vollmers.
I have kind of a simple answer for this, because I am not a developer and I am not in finance for developing. So I think that when we have people like the gentleman we have now who is in the planning department, and the changes that they're making for IT is going to tremendously affect that department and the way that people engage and get planning and have access to that, because some people that don't know potentially that the economic development department is not just the EDC, the acronyms that people use, right? So when we see that development changing, it's tremendous to me, because in 2013 when I participated in Leadership Reading, it was something that was like pie in the sky idea to do out there. And so now for the time that has passed since then that we're seeing it develop, I think that we have great quality people here, and we have people who are aligned. And the momentum that we're seeing in growth is because people are working hard in our city council and in all of those departments to see it be better for everything, not just a great big developer. Like, we see Costco come in and they have millions of dollars, so there's no question for them to meet the needs that we ask for. But those mid-level and people who want to be a part of that growth, because they're looking down the line like we were in 2013 of where we are now, to see the momentum not stopping. So I hope to see that. And I think that sometimes what we can do is just be a part of that. And if they were to hit problems, to get out of my situation and go with them to the planning department and just see where the hitches are and help work those out with the people in the planning department and myself being involved.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
All right. Economic development, economic vitality is the very backbone of the long-term sustainability of a community. Stillwater is a project that is very near and dear to my heart in terms of
promoting that and making sure that it succeeds. As a city council member, if elected, I would volunteer. Number one, guys, please put me in charge. I want to be the point guard. I want to make sure this ball does not drop. That is low-hanging fruit because there's a tremendous momentum there, which segues to number two, Todd Jones. I know you've already got a shout-out. You've been leading that effort with Janelle. You've been kicking butt. Really appreciate it. Keep up the good work. And as a city council member, what I would do is I'd call Todd or I'd knock on his door unsolicited and just to freak him out and say, Todd, how's it going? How can I help you? What do you need? And maintaining that connection, maintaining that, let's say, put the pedal on the metal to make sure it goes through. The third thing, I'll tell you a story. I'm a real estate lender. We manage a private fund. And I'll let you in on a secret, okay? When a borrower comes in, you can put the pedal to the metal or you can put up some gates and say, hey, you know, gotta wait over the weekend. But if you want to get it done, you're getting it done. In terms of Stillwater, for me, I'm that latter scenario. We need to get this done. 2,000 jobs in the next 3 years. These are not retail jobs. These are career jobs that can fund families, pay for mortgages, and sustain lives. And our kids can actually stay here for a change, and we don't have to export them anymore. So how can we help that? I think the biggest thing is, as a city council member, impact culture in the city. What does that look like? Well, it's actually encouraging perhaps city staff and say, hey, guys, instead of, I don't know, this is now, I'll drop it now because I'm done.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Thank you. So two things, making sure the project completed on time. First, seeing what the client needs at a minimum, like what can we get them right now, quick, and then also understanding what they're looking for and their development and their future and what we can match for them, either the city or potentially which local services already exist that we can help match what they're looking for. And then part of, as people have already mentioned before, with the planning department, I've talked with a few people there, and I've also heard from the other side, people have tried to get houses and businesses up. And honestly, that costs businesses money that want to be here. If they have to wait, as someone said, 6 weeks for a project, that's 6 weeks of having to pay people, keep them on, and all those things. So honestly, helping by paying for a few more permitting people or however they want to do it, that actually saves other businesses in the community lots of money in the long run. So definitely in favor of that. And then also, businesses just like knowing they're supported. So being able to do that is really good because then they also spread the word, say, hey, Reading is a great place to do business. Come on up. And then also personally for me, I'm still quite young, leaving this area and not coming back for a while was partially because there weren't these sort of career jobs. So Stillwater having these now and making more, that's really exciting for me to keep that sort of age group of post high school to late 20s to keep them here and be part of the community long term. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Crockett.
So when I ran 4 years ago, I talked to quite a few builders, and I don't know if you know this, but Reading has a very bad reputation in terms of being very difficult to deal with. Things are getting better from what I understand, but it takes a long time to fix a reputation. So I think there's some practical things we can do to make it so we're drawing people in. I'm not just saying, you know, green light some things here and there. I'm talking about aggressively going after people that are going to build things and add economic vitality to our area. I'd love to see a huge sign when you drive down I-5 that says Reading, the best place to build in California. Like, that would be a lot of exposure. But before we put that sign up, I'm going to need two other council members to agree with me to look over some of the codes we have and make it easier, make it true. Like, we could zone specific places in the city and really incentivize people. Stillwater Business Park, it's a success now, but it was extremely controversial back in the day. I remember the grand jury report that basically said, you guys are wasting a bunch of money, you need to sell this thing. Right? I remember someone coming up at city council and saying, sell, baby, sell. Yeah. So it was a problematic thing, and part of that has to do, this is a great place, but we have a bad reputation. right? So people don't want to come to a place that has a bad reputation. So we need to fix that reputation. I think there's some practical things we can do to do that and get the word out. And I mean, I don't care if we have to hire another person. You got to spend money to make money. Hire a person that's going to specifically target people, different businesses that have demographics that would maybe want to live here, and specifically go after those businesses and say, hey, we got a place here. It's, you know, there's some perks. You can come here. These are all the things, you know, we got this outdoor stuff. Lean on our strengths. Get someone that we can really have sending out, again, spending money, coding, putting signs up, changing that reputation. So when people are thinking about building something somewhere, Reading's one of the first places they think about.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
So one of the keys, I think, is culture, as some of the other candidates have talked about. It's about being customer service focused. And some people have asked, like, why does this matter? Why does it matter that the permit center or the development services flow more smoothly for everybody? Because not everybody in here is building a home. Not everyone in here is pulling a permit. Not all of the people that are voting are experiencing these same problems. The way that it trickles down to our community is that when we have a slowdown or when things are not smooth or when things are difficult, it affects the job. It affects those people that are making income in construction space or all of the supporting services, clerical and administrative and everything that kind of trickles down. We have a huge economy based on our ability to move permits through the process as smoothly as possible. I'm really glad to hear that we're doing well and we're moving forward. I love the progress that Jeremy is making, but I think we can do some things to improve and do that even better. And I think it is about having a customer service mindset. So I think technology, why can't we ask the questions, how can we lead the way in California by using technology to make some permits, eliminate the need to go into the city altogether, online printing of permits? For instance, REU requires for a permit for solar. Why can't we eliminate the need for a wet signature on that permit from the homeowner? It's one example, right? All right, so the other things is I think the Stillwater example is great. Whenever we have big companies come to town, I think the city does a great job to put all hands on deck. I think Todd does a great job to move the forces that be. But I want to see us move smoother for the smaller people, those that are taking big risks, the entrepreneurs, because that's how we start to see diversity of projects in our community, not just from the bigger developers, but from those that are really doing one-off projects that benefit our community.
Thank you. Mr. DeQuisto.
So I have the unique opportunity as an existing council member to tell you some things about Stillwater to answer the question that none of these people would know because many of the discussions we have are in closed session. The city, in my opinion, when it bought Stillwater was a mistake because it put them in competition with private developers and private landowners, and I don't think that's the city's job. The city spent a lot of money and there was no progress for many, many years. And that was due to a variety of factors. It was due to the economy. It was due to state regulations. It was due to other areas being more accessible, have rail transport, other things that companies would look for. So when you try to land a big company, there's a number of factors that they look for. Todd could give a better answer than I can, but he's shaking his head yes, so I guess I'm right so far. So what happened was the economy changed, and the number of big developing lots decreased. And a large company from Sacramento called Panattoni, who'd been nosing around, came up here and said, we're finally interested in doing some work up here. And what Panattoni does is they work both ends of the scale. They come and they get a lot and they tie it up. And they say, we're looking for a large-term builder or occupier, maybe thousands of jobs, and they are working on that. And what we do is we work on plans with them to build them a facility. We bought the lot, we build the facility, then we lease long-term back to them. And that's what we try to do. And those projects take years and years and years to put together. Panattoni has been working actively with the city. The city has a special team that they use for Stillwater development, and they've gotten accolades from Panattoni and from others that when they come up here for Stillwater and they want to work on it, they get good service, good response, quick response. It is all hands on deck. So the city is doing a very good job as far as that goes. There recently was when I first started, I think there were 16 out of 18 lots that were in escrow or had been sold. That number fluctuates. I think one of the deals may have fallen apart or is working and falling apart, but the Panattoni deal is still working and moving forward. It just takes time.
Thank you. Mr. Munz is going to answer first to this question. Question number 5.
Oh, joy.
Do you think Reading's a business-friendly city? What is the most important way you will support local business as a city councilor? You have 2 minutes.
Do I think Reading's a friendly city?
Do you think Reading's a business-friendly city? And what's the most important way you will support local business as a city councilor?
Well, the first thing I need to do is drop Todd Jones's name. So that's my first order of business. Todd and I have been friends for years. Just kidding. Todd, good to see you. I do not think, well, let me go bigger. I think California is not a very business-friendly place. But I do like Reading. I like what our council has been doing. There are approximately 90,000 fees and taxes that come through California to make things more miserable for businesses. Businesses are moving out of this state, not into the state. They're moving out. So one of the things I would like to do is cut fees, cut taxes. I'm not in favor of raising taxes in any way, shape, or form. I know sometimes we raise City of Reading electric fees for projects and what have you, but I am not in favor. I would love to make us more friendly, cutting out impact fees, you know, car fees, and all of those other kind of fees that we have. I know we can't eliminate them all, but I think we could do a better job. You know, the building placed on Alturas Road stood for 3 years, the 64 unit before, and I believe part of that is a result of a lot of heavy fees that they had to go through. So, thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Ms. Audette, I'll repeat the question for you as you asked. Do you think Reading is a business-friendly city? What is the most important way you will support local business as a city councilor?
So I do think that Reading, having lived all throughout California, from San Diego, Orange County, Los Angeles, I lived in San Francisco, Oakland, wow. I've lived in a lot of places in California, but this is the best one. I actually do think that Reading is business friendly. Now, can we be friendlier? Always. We can always be friendlier. But, you know, we are the place where new businesses are starting in greater number than anywhere else. We are the number one most prosperous city. And I think the atmosphere here, the culture here is that if you have a small business, we will support you. If you have a need, we've got a nonprofit that starts up to address that need as well. So the Chamber's done a great job of cultivating a celebratory environment for business and to promote business. I think in the city of Reading, whenever you're dealing with planning and development, people believe that you could be doing better, and I agree with that. But when it comes to our infrastructure of what we do to create here, you want to start a new business, these are the steps that you can take. It's happening every day. So the data says that we're the number one place to start a new business in California. But what I'm looking for is how are we actually growing those businesses from small businesses to these mid-level to larger businesses? And that's difficult in Reading because of these regulations. We have over 394,000 regulations, laws in California. It's more than any other state. And so it is not always business friendly to be in California, but I think what we've done a really good job of here in Reading is saying maybe the rest of California isn't friendly, but go ahead and come here because we're going to make it easier for you to be successful. We have a community that comes around businesses, and I do think that we're innovating and thinking of ways to make it affordable for businesses, mid-level businesses, to come here and to stay in California. For some, this is their last attempt to stay in California is to come to a place like Reading, and we are doing a good job of telling that story.
Thank you. Mr. Parton.
Thank you. I would think the key would be to attract the workforce that we need here to help build economic growth. And so how are you going to do that? Housing is at still a low figure here as far as housing for workforce housing. So when people come here to look, they need to know that, again, it's a safe place. So first, make it safe. Secondly, on housing, what I would do in particular is I would cut fees for a number of permits in housing. Make housing, affordable housing is one thing, and I've been involved in creating affordable housing in our community. But we need affordable housing for the workers that we want to attract, so the businesses will also want to locate here. And the way to do that is cut down on those impact fees. It's been done before. We could do it through giving a certain number of permits to give out and spur that growth. You know, we want to make it friendly for business, but when you hear a story from a dentist that wants to have a tank, nitrous oxide tank, closet built into his office, and the permit fee is $40,000, you got to say, is that making it easy for business to grow and expand in our area? So I think we could do better. We could cut down on that, attract the workforce that we need, and supply what we need for law enforcement, and business will come. Business will come. We have all the assets here. We just have to keep working to solve our problems, the main problem being the crime issue.
Thank you. Ms. Vollmers.
Thank you. I do think it's business friendly here. I have so many friends that run their own businesses here, and I see them excelling, and I see a lot of momentum here that has not stopped through the pandemic. So anyone who believes that it's not, I think you just need to go out there and participate, being a vendor or being someone who eats at a restaurant or making sure whatever you're sourcing, you're doing it locally, because I'm watching a lot of people thrive here, and it's awesome to see. So I think that something that a council member could do is participate in how rates and fees are evaluated or how they're set, and maybe reanalyze what the fees are, like Marcus mentioned, because some things are misappropriately rated for what they are and what they're providing. So that's something that I would look into.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
If you are a small business owner here in Reading, join the chamber. They give you free marketing, and they will come by your storefront on Thursdays and give you some more marketing. So join the chamber, or clone Jake, one of the two. He is our inside marketer for the city of Reading, and he is the biggest proponent of local businesses. An actual real additional step, not real step. Let me sidestep that misstep. You see what I did there? Kids, 12 to 18-year-olds, impressionable mentoring entrepreneurship programs. It actually hits on several things all at once. One, a lot of the kids that have high A scores, adverse childhood experiences, you can actually find a mentorship program in there. They fill the void in terms of a parental figure not being there. Two, you give them dignity. You give them tools to be able to understand, hey, this is what it is to be able to succeed on my own and learn what it is, the payoff for being an entrepreneur. You can start off small. There are tons of nonprofits, national, local, statewide, that actually do that. Partner with them on that piece. Number three, I'm going to steal Josh Johnson's thunder here a little bit. I'm going to talk about Startup Reading really quickly. There is a culture. I am sorry. There is a culture, and you too, Andrew. There's a culture of startup, and there's a culture of just not being siloed, but actually founders helping each other out. It is a thriving community, and I'll end it there out of respect for Josh. You can touch on that, the rest of that. And finally, talking about culture, what is the city supposed to do? What is the role of the city? Infrastructure, safety. City stays in our lanes and builds that and maintains that. Local businesses, small businesses, big businesses, medium-sized businesses will thrive. So if the city stays in our own lane, we will thrive.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
First off, I do feel Reading is business-friendly. I feel like I see a new business every week, if not more. And then also, firstly, I would want to sort of survey businesses in the community, just ask them sort of to rank their expenses, like what is their biggest expense, and then work on which ones we can actually decrease for them or help alleviate in some way or just help them out, because if all of them are being affected in certain ways, then as city, we can help them in that regard. And then also, as we've talked about, reexamining the permitting and regulation process. I mean, I'm in favor of those for standards, but as some have been mentioned, it's just wild how expensive some of these are, and like, do they really need to be like that? Or perhaps there might be a tax credit given to people who have done these things to sort of help alleviate that burden. And then lastly, for business, attract talent and retain who we have, and that kind of ties up what we've been talking about tonight, housing, amenities, crime, all that. To have thriving businesses, we do need good people to stay here, and to do that, we need to have a great city. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Crockett.
Yeah, I think Reading is super business friendly in terms of people, right? I mean, Todd Jones, the Chamber, we have this cool support system, Startup Reading, all these really cool things. If you want to get a business going, it's there. There's supporting facilities to help you get going. There's people who give you advice. I think that's awesome. However, on the flip side, some of the regulations aren't so awesome. I'm a teacher, and going through my teaching school, I learned that I have to do all these things. And then I started teaching, and I have 150 students, and I'm supposed to have an individualized learning program for each student that's struggling. It is not practical. It is not anywhere near reality. I could work 24 hours a day and not do all the things I'm required to do by California state code or whatever. It's kind of like that with businesses. As a teacher, I have to weigh out, like, which student do I give more attention to? Where do I spend my time and energy in terms of investing in my classroom? And I feel like at the ground level, businesses kind of know where the problems are and where the focus needs to be. And I think anytime you're talking about policies at a city council level, that's where we need to listen. And again, it's like we're going to have to, you know, balance some competing interests, but there's a lot of things that have been done in the past that kind of don't give us a great reputation. And I think we need to change some facts on the ground, and you guys are in the best position to say, hey, this is the stuff that, you know, the $40,000 that we have to spend to redo a closet. That's absurd. I think there's some practical things we do to either not necessarily follow the code to the letter of the law and kind of let enforcement know that, or redo the code in ways that we can practically here at a local level. I know we're saddled with state codes that we just can't get around. But again, I'm saddled with all sorts of things that I'm supposed to do as a teacher, and maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but I don't follow the letter of the law because it's impossible. I cannot make an individualized learning plan for every single student in my classroom. It just isn't going to happen. No teacher does that. And you guys as businesses know there's things that no business can really saddle.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
I love how these last two questions kind of run together, so I'm going to talk a little bit about both of them. But yes, I do think we're business friendly. I think that we have become increasingly more business friendly because of the leadership at the Chamber, the EDC, even those at the city. I know that we talk a lot about problems, and I know that a lot of the questions are innate. We're going to ask questions that are about issues we see in the city, but we are seeing positive momentum in a lot of ways, and we're feeling the effects of that. We were one of the fastest growing small cities in the entire nation during the pandemic, fastest growing in the state of California. We are business friendly, but we also, as government, what you're asking of an elected official is to make regulations just suck a little less, right? Like, because they just naturally, they're there, and they're, some of them are necessary, some of them are probably not, but we just, as government, try to just make it suck less for you. Like, that's the goal, right? So that you can get your business off the ground, and we do have one of the most supportive entrepreneur communities in the nation, I think, and I've been around in the startup communities. You can do a lot here, but one of the things we need to do to become a headline of being business friendly is to continue to attract remote workers. If we could become a Zoom town, I think that the then talent pool increases in our area so that businesses can look and see that they have people they can recruit right here in our town. And we have seen a huge influx there. We need more exports, not just recycled imports that where we're just selling to one another and trading dollars. We need people to continue to innovate, that sell products outside of our city and bring dollars into our city. That's how we're going to continue to thrive and grow economically.
Thank you. Mr. DeQuisto.
So again, the question is Reading business friendly? It's a little bit like the elephant story I told. It depends who you ask. I heard the story about the gentleman that wants to put a nitrous oxide container and it costs $40,000. Seems a little unreasonable. But then we have the Stillwater help team that gets compliments from the people that go there. So I think it depends who you are, who you know, and it's a mixed bag on there. What have I done and what will I continue to do? I think I'm one of the strongest business community supporters on the council. Initially, there was a move to raise impact fees for parks because they thought if you built a commercial building, you would need more parks. I failed to see the connection to that. I voted no on that. It's a small amount, but it's a little bit, and every little bit helps. There was a second incident. It's not really, it's sort of related to the business community, and that had to do with the city wanting to unilaterally change a number of solar contracts where they had entered into contract with individual people who spent money, put solar on their houses, were getting reimbursed at a rate of, let's say, 15 cents. I'm just making that up. And the city said, well, that's costing us too much money. We want to make it 3 cents, and we're just going to unilaterally change all the contracts. Well, we got in a big brouhaha over that, and we agreed to change it, but we didn't do it retroactively. So there's two sets of people there. So that's one of the things that I'm proud that I voted on. Bethel, whether you love them or you hate them, they're a big economic driver in the community. Many of the businesses that come into town are Bethel-driven, Bethel-related, and they're good businesses, and they help provide a strong tax base for the community, and I think it's a good thing to do. We voted to double the Todd Jones' budget again. You're welcome. And they do lots of things. We should have him do the program next time. The air service increase has been very helpful to the business community. We've got 3 or 4 flights right now. We're working on getting one from Denver, hopefully next year, or maybe the year after, but sometime we'll get one. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Valenzuela.
All right. So is Reading business friendly? Well, coming from a local business that started from a sole proprietor 8 years ago, and now I have increased to an LLC, I actually felt a lot of support from my community, whether it be from the chamber or a local networking group. I have a list of people that advertise all the time for tourism as well as assistance. So with assistance, we have the chamber, we have the EDC, we have the SBDC, we have Jedi Women's Business Center, Startup Reading, Todd Jones. So advertising, we have Visit Reading, Savor Shasta, Reading Buzz, Choose Reading, all trying to advertise and bring in tourism. So that being said, we also have the airport that's attracting tourism. So I think that we're doing all the right things to supply business for our community. And I agree that not all of it can come just from our community, although we have been known in the past to just run for supporting our local business or families that are in trouble, like during the car fire. We all race to help each other financially as well as just emotional support and everything. When we supported each other during the pandemic, I just know that this is a community that cares about each other, our families, our businesses. And as a council member, I hope to help the local business community because I want to make decisions like when we go through those hard times to make sure that if there's funding available for these local businesses to recover, I want to make sure to choose the local businesses because I know firsthand how we acquired debt and we were not just set off to go and everything. So I really I loved Jake's speech about trying to get up there and advocate for the business community because I'm doing the exact same thing, supporting local, making sure we drive in tourism. I hope that my new Cirque business is going to drive in even more tourism. So thank you.
Thank you.
So we've made it to the final question, and this one is really open-ended. It's closing comments, but just sort of your case for support, the why not only for you running, but also why should the business community vote for you for city council? And Tanessa Audette, you get to begin. 1 minute.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm encouraged seeing you all here, and I hope you're encouraged by what you've heard tonight. When I think about the role of an elected, the analogy I have is like an archer. I had a daughter who loved Hunger Games. She changed her name to Kat. We'll talk about that later. But really, when you think of an elected, I want you to think of an archer. You know, you have a bow, and the structure of that is like government, and the arrows are the resources that we have, whether that's police, fire, nonprofits, business sector, and you have targets, which are issues, whether that's crime, economic development, homelessness, and it's important that the elected official creates enough tension that there is the trajectory needed to solve the issues that we have. And I will be that for you. And so I am asking for your vote. I'm asking for your support. I will be the one that creates that tension so you don't have to. I'll create the opportunities for you to know what's happening so that you're aware of the process of what's happening and not just the end result. So I invite you to go to my website, which is votetanessa.com, to learn more about me. There's videos, there's information, and join me on a Tuesday with Tanessa in town.
Thank you. Mr. Parton, 1 minute.
You see hear the same themes throughout here tonight with crime, homelessness, and economic development. I would like you to consider experience with it. My experience is civic experience. I've had 3 different appointments to the city of Reading over the last decade. One probably more prominent is a electric utility commissioner. Knowing how our utility runs is an important aspect of being a city council person. 40 years in business, 20 years here in this area, where I've run a business and learned about the buying and selling of major properties, and we've seen what's happened lately on that. I think I could be of help. Involve also locally in the Colt 45s, Collegiate Baseball League. Shows you what you can do with public-private partnerships where you've had this entity bring in hundreds of thousands of dollars of local business money to make a successful enterprise on a city asset. So I would appreciate and hope that you look at that experience that I could bring. I'm willing to invest 4 years. Thank you, and I would honor your vote.
Thank you. Ms. Vollmers.
I'm going to read mine because I don't want to leave anything out. In 1 minute. Sheesh. I was raised in Reading from when I was 8 years old, and when my family moved here, we experienced homelessness. The city has taught me about hard work, grit, and creativity. Northern California has ingrained a deep love for the wild outdoors, and the city drew my husband and I back to raise our 4 girls here. I'm a candidate for the same reasons that I vote. I have lobbied for educational schools, charters, and access to financial support for rights to homeschool and charter schools. Sorry, I botched that. And I've also lobbied for parental choice in education and medical freedom. I've designed educational workshops for people to teach them their rights and why they must really know that their vote does matter. And that's why I want to be on the council to represent the people's vote. I bring a true heart for our community that is rooted in neutral perspective that what best serves the community of Reading. I have an understanding of the needs of the people here because I have lived here most of my life. And you can take me out of Reading, but you cannot take Reading out of me.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
My father-in-law graduated from Enterprise in 1973 and did Shasta College for 2 years. Then he left and never looked back. I have 2 daughters here right now. I don't want what happened to my father-in-law to happen to my daughters. The reason why he left was there are no job opportunities here. I don't want that to happen to any of our kids or grandkids in this room. I'm running because I want to unlock Reading's potential. I'm running because I want to help our city make wise financial decisions. And I'm running because I want to strengthen our economy. My background spans the U.S. Treasury Department in Washington, D.C. I worked on Wall Street. 3 years managing multi-billion-dollar portfolios, and I've worked in nonprofits, government and private sector, collaborative experience. And I have a commitment to our community. I'm currently the vice chair of our CDAC. Let's go with that. Easier. Okay? How much time we got? 5 seconds. I helped as a budget committee member at Reading School of the Arts, and I was a car fire volunteer. I love Reading.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
So I believe the role of a council member is to elevate problems and issues by shining a spotlight on them to help direct resources and personnel towards them. There are lifetimes of knowledge available to the council, and it's in everyone's best interest to heed that. I just want to emphasize my door is always open, and I will listen and respond like those in the business community. You can find me at City Council upon a hill. It's a joke. And I just want to say thank you for letting me speak tonight.
Thank you. Mr. Crockett.
So there's a large contingent here that want to keep the status quo
but also complain about things that are going on and don't want to spend any money. I'm not interested in representing those individuals. Things that we need that move us forward, things like the food truck, that was controversial. The sundial, controversial. The Garden of Lights, people voted no to fund that. We need people that are going to vote yes for those things, that are going to take risk. You guys as a business community understand that you have to take risk to move forward. So I've done my research. I've watched the city council meetings. I've represented part-time faculty at Shasta College for years. And I want to represent and serve this community and move us forward by saying yes to the opportunities that are presenting themselves and make sure that we move forward. And maybe not everything's a winner, but we're going to take risks and we're going to move forward and we're going to do the best we can to keep improving our culture, keep improving the business culture, and just keep improving our standard of living in this area. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
I'm asking for your vote tonight, for you to put your faith in me, because I believe that we all have put our faith in Reading. And I see this partnership between government and community to be a lot like a team of horses where the community is the lead horse. You guys are the ones taking the risk. You guys are the boots on the ground. You're doing it, and you need government to run with you, not against you, in order for us to go forward. And I believe we're on the cusp of seeing some of the best days the city has ever seen, and we're right there. We're facing our problems. We're facing our challenges boldly and courageously. I believe that if you vote for your top three candidates, that I believe we're going to see the next iteration of Reading be the best that it's ever been. And I think that we need to continue to have elected officials that represent us in multiple facets. What you're going to get from me is someone who's actively building and working with the city, collaborating with staff. I'm going to bring with me a spirit of collaboration between city and county. And I'm also someone who knows what it's like to write his name and sign his name on the front of a check, not the back of a check only. And that's what you get from me. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DeQuisto.
Thank you. I'm asking for your vote. My record speaks for itself. I won't go over it for too long. Every vote that I make, I base it on what I believe is in the best interest of the citizens of Reading. That, I think, is the ultimate choice, not what's in my best interest or what's in the other council members' best interest. And I always make my decisions in an open and honest and transparent way. I post many of them on Facebook. I'm always willing to explain it. We can agree to disagree or agree to agree, but that's how I believe that this is the best way to run the city and the best for the citizens. I'm a fiscal conservative. I don't believe in spending money that you don't have. I think you should pay attention to your checkbook. I don't have a problem questioning staff, because many times it seems that the staff comes with preordained ideas and they don't think about everything. And frankly, I'm tired of losing on 3-2 and 4-1 votes. I'd like you to support me. I'd like you to support Marcus Parton as well for city council. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Valenzuela.
Well, I'm a third-generation Reading resident, and I have two young children and a wonderful family that have lived in their homes for, many of them, over 20 years in the same home. And my parents were high school sweethearts. I met my husband in high school, and I just feel like you are my people. And it is my responsibility as someone who is gaining leadership in the community and who is born and raised here to be involved in the decision-making processes of where we're going to go. I want to make sure that we are preserving our Reading identity as well as being able to raise our families in a safe community. So I would appreciate your vote. If you want more information, you can go to votejordan.info, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Finally, Mr. Munns.
Jack Munns, born and raised in Reading, California, graduated from Enterprise High School. I see Reading is doing a great job. They're doing a lot of building, which I love, but I see two big holes in the bottom of that boat, crime and homelessness. The two issues that are plaguing our community, I have vast experience in. Practical experience, successful experience in both of those areas. I want to add that one thing, I think we need to do some more things for our kids. You know, coming out of the pandemic, it has really had a great effect on our kids. I love that they expanded the skate park. They put in a bike track. I would like to expand that, maybe get some Spartan-type races or some obstacle courses to help our kids grow and think, not just get over stuff, but be able to think about through these things. I'd like to add a hardcore palace where you play basketball. As my time is running out, vote Jack Munns. Go to jackmunns.com. I appreciate your vote, and I know Patrick McNally. Does that help?
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a big round of applause for our candidates. It's wonderful to have 100% attendance here tonight from all 10 of you, and I appreciate your courage to run, and I appreciate your decorum tonight with one another and with all of us, and even with Todd Jones. And I want to thank we got to get t-shirts. Anyway, I want to thank the Sheraton for their hospitality tonight, and the staff did a wonderful job with the cookies and the coffee and the water, and their cookies here, so take them home. Thank you to KCNR, Carl Bott, and Pat Karch for all of your work. Appreciate that. On behalf of the Chamber and its board, thank you all for attending tonight, this forum. And please remember to vote later this fall, and have a great evening, everyone. Pick up your cards on the way out.
Okay, we've just been listening to all 10 candidates for City Council giving their answers to a series of questions ranging from homelessness to police to infrastructure needs, development, and what's the most important thing you can do with business. So, and with us right now is Jake Mangus. Jake, good evening, buddy.
Good evening, Carl.
Nope, go the other way.
Hey, good evening, Carl. Thank you so much for hosting this tonight, helping us to host it and broadcast it. It's been great.
Yeah, it's I thought, very interesting. I just went through the series of questions, and if I can get the exact questions from you, in an email or something like this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I want to talk about it when we talk about it, but this will be the whole forum will be on KCNR and our webpage. On our website tomorrow, if not tonight. It may beam up tonight.
That's great, and we'll share that out too on our channels to help amplify that. It's been a great way of getting that information.
So what do you think about tonight?
Well, what we tried to do was to make sure that, I worked really hard to make questions that were not as fluffy as, in the past you kind of just refine this process.
Yeah.
And I knew that the bottom line for us was we wanted the voice of our membership and the essence of that survey to come forward tonight. That was our commitment. It wasn't any surprise, probably, the topics, because those things tend to remain the same outside of inflation, supply chain issues. You're talking workforce issues, public safety, homelessness, things that we've been dealing with for a long time. And I was looking for specific ideas from these candidates.
Did you hear any specific ideas, really?
I think that
I'm a little jaundiced on this.
Oh, yeah, it's been...
For 13 years, or going on 14 in December, we've asked the same questions, and you've asked the same questions, and others, and we get the same answers. I didn't hear one thing in here tonight that said, this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah, I was hoping because, I noticed that they kind of stuck to some of the rules of these things, which is doesn't matter what the question is, stick to your talking point.
I know.
And I tried with the citing specific examples, adding those in. But I will say this, that I'm encouraged by my interpretation that all 10 of these candidates are in it for the right reasons, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
So
they're very they do have ideas, and it could be in the sense that, well, except for Mike DeQuisto, it's there. None of them have been in city government.
Yeah.
And I don't think they have any idea. And I don't mean this in a negative sense, because it's all of them. They have no idea what they're going to face when they get in there and what they're going to be dealing with. Now, Mike does.
Quite a few of them, including Mike, specifically cited the EDC and the Chamber.
Yes.
And the roles that the organizations play and the importance of the success of business and how the private sector feeds the public sector. We heard a number of times the two primary roles of government is public safety and infrastructure. It's nice to hear those two things uttered. And so that is encouraging. We know that in all reality, they're going to have to learn a lot. Unless you're Mike DeQuisto and you've already been there. Yeah. There are others too, like Marcus Barton served on commissions.
These are all bright people, and they have like developers like Joshua and Marcus Barton.
Yes.
Others have worked in city government and have an idea on how that works. Others are educators. And you know, it doesn't mean they can't be a very effective council person because they haven't had that experience. It's just that most of them don't realize that when they roll into this, the bureaucracy they're going against.
So the one question that, you know, I did ask about Stillwater Business Park, and I was debating whether or not to go that direction or to say recently the city council decided to move forward with a Reading Riverfront specific plan revision. What's your opinion of how that process went with that unsolicited offer? Because a number of the people there spoke